भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 12, Text 5 and 6. Ramana Uvacha Ayam Jano Nama Chalan Prithivyam Ya Partiva Partiva Kasya Heto Tasyapi Shangriyor Adhi Gulpa Jangha Januru Madhyora Shirodaramsa Brahmana Uvacha Ayam jano nama chalan prithivyam Ya partiva partiva kasya heto Tasyapi changriya adi gulpa jangha Januru madhyora shirodaramsa Brahmana uvacha Ayam jano nama chalan prithivyam Ya partiva partiva kasya heto Tasyapi changriya adi gulpa jangha Januru madhyora sirodaramsa Brahmana uvacha Ayam jano nama chalam prithivyam Ya partiva partiva kasya heto Tasyapi changriya adi gulpa jangha Janura madhyora sirodaramsa
Ladies, please.
Brahmana uvacha. The Brahman said, ayam, this, jana, person, nama, celebrated as such, chalon, moving, prithivyam, on the earth, yaha, who, partivaha, a transformation of the earth, partiva, O king, who possesses a similar earthly body, kasya, for what? Heto, reason, tasya api, of him also, cha, and, angriyo, feet, adhi, above, golpa, ankles, jangha, calves, janu, knees. So before the translation, I'll read the text number 6. Am sedi darvi shibika chayasyam sovira rajetya padesha aste yasmin bhavan rudha nijabhimano rajasmi sindhu shviti dur madandham. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. The self-realized Brahman, Jad Bharat, said, among the various material combinations and permutations, there are various forms and earthly transformations. For some reason, these move on the surface of the earth and are called palanquin carriers. So he's referring to the three others who were with him carrying the palanquin in which the king was seated. Those material transformations which do not move are gross material objects like stones. In any case, the material body is made of earth and stone in the form of feet, ankles, calves, knees, thighs, torso, throat, and head. Upon the shoulders is the wooden palanquin, and within the palanquin is the so-called king of Sovira. Notice he says so-called, and he explains that a little bit on. The body of the king is simply another transformation of earth, but within that body your lordship is situated, and falsely thinking that you are the king of the state of Sovira. That's why he says so-called. He says that you're not really the king of Sovira. He says you're really the spirit soul within. And that king of Sovira is just a temporary covering. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. After analyzing the material bodies of the palanquin carrier and the palanquin passenger, Jad Bharat concludes that the real living force is the living entity. The living entity is the offshoot or offspring of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, within this material world, among moving and non-moving things, the real principle is Lord Vishnu. Due to his presence, everything is working, and there are actions and reactions. One who understands Lord Vishnu as the original cause of everything is to be understood to be perfectly situated in knowledge. Although he was falsely proud of being a king, King Rahugana was not really situated in knowledge. Therefore, he was rebuking the palanquin carriers, including the self-realized Brahmin, Jad Bharat. This is the first accusation Jad Bharat made against the king, who was daring to talk to a learned Brahmin from the flimsy ground of ignorance, identifying everything with matter. King Rahugana argued that the living entity is within the body, and that when the body is fatigued, the living entity within must therefore be suffering. It is clearly explained in the following verses that the living entity does not suffer due to the body's fatigue. Living entity is unaffected. Living entity cannot be cannot be slain by any weapons. It can't be burned by fire. It can't be moistened by water. It can't be withered by the wind. It is eternal, ever-existing, primeval, unborn. So, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti gives an example of a child heavily decorated with ornaments. Although the child's body is very delicate, he does not feel fatigue nor do the parents think that his ornaments should be taken away. The living entity has nothing to do with bodily pains and pleasures. These are simply mental concoctions. An intelligent man will find the original cause of everything. Material combinations and permutations may be a matter of fact in worldly dealings, but actually the living force, the soul, has nothing to do with them. Those who are materially upset take care of the body and manufacture Daridra Narayan, or poor Narayan. However, it is not a fact that the soul or supersoul becomes poor simply because the body is poor. So this was a concept that was promulgated during the time of Mahatma Gandhi, and probably still is that the idea is that not only is God in everyone, but God is everyone. And simply thinking that God is everyone, that God is poor because all the poor people are God. And it's only a matter of time before these poor people realize themselves that they are the glorious, opulent Lord Vishnu. So this is a complete misunderstanding of Vedic teachings, and it is herewith being refuted. The soul and supersoul are always apart from bodily pleasure and pain. Om agyana timirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here we find Judd Barrett, great, illuminated, glorious sage, not playing the part of a sage, as many do in kingdoms, but playing really the part of a person who might be considered to be retarded, generally speaking. But after he has been chastised by King Rahugana, he suddenly reveals his true colors or his true knowledge, that he's not what he appears to be. It's very interesting how at the very beginning, when the four palanquin bearers were carrying the king, and Judd Barrett was walking especially slowly to make certain that he would not step on any ants, and therefore the palanquin could not move as fast as the other three palanquin bearers were walking. Consequently, there was a shaking within the palanquin, and as a result of that shaking, the king became at first slightly disturbed, and then as it continued, after he complained, he became very disturbed. So here you have a very good example of a person who is filled with lots of false pride. We're going to talk a lot about false pride, and I'm also going to try to differentiate it from real and true pride, and how one is valuable and beneficial, and how the other is harmful and destructive, which the king right now is has been manifesting. He chastised Judd Barrett. He said sarcastic words such as, "Oh, you must be very fatigued. You've been walking alone. You don't have any helpers. You've been carrying this palanquin for such a long time. Actually, he's only been carrying it about a minute or so. But he's being sarcastic. You've been carrying it such a long time, and oh, for such a long distance that undoubtedly you must be very tired from this big, long journey. And you're not very strong. Of course, Jed Barrett was very strong. He had good muscles because he had been working in the fields. He said, "You're not very strong. And look at you. You look like you're suffering from the decrepitancy of old age. And it appears that the other three men, they're not even cooperating with you. So obviously, you must have some really strong problems. What's wrong with you?" So he's actually acting in such a manner as to chastise him, to speak adversely towards him. And his position is that Jud Barrett was being inattentive. He was being indifferent. And the king's pride was being piqued. It was being disturbed. In other words, the king, who undoubtedly in his earlier years, because most kings were taught by the Brahmins basic Vedic teachings and teachings about self-realization, God-realization, but quite often as a result of becoming involved in the management and the running of the kingdom, in defense, in acquiring riches, in dealing with the problems of the kingdom, they often would put those higher Vedic teachings kind of in the background and put the material ideas, the things dealing with accumulation of wealth, acquiring pleasure, maybe developing religion, that would be more in the foreground, and the principles of self-realization and or liberation and God-realization would be in the background. Unlike persons or kings like King Yudhishthira, who would put these right in the foreground. And he would use these principles, which he knew, which he memorized, as a means of guiding him in the management or the proper management of the kingdom. In other words, he would not forget God and the principles that the Lord gave him, and which were manifest, which were in the Vedas, which he read regularly. So he used these principles to manage the kingdom, and as a result, he could guide the people not only by his good example, but he could guide the people by principle, by the principle, and also by enunciating these principles and reminding the people what those principles were. In other words, for a king to be a great leader, Srila Prabhupada says again and again that he must be a devotee of the Lord. These are called Rajarshis, or saintly kings. And a Rajarshi keeps in mind kings like, as I said, Yudhishthira, King Janaka, and King Parikshit. They keep in the forefront of their mind the higher principles of life, that the goal of acquiring wealth, acquiring pleasure, religion, has one higher purpose. And that higher purpose is to always remember God and to never forget God. Yes, you can have your wealth, but never think that that wealth is yours. It belongs to Krishna. You can have your pleasure within regulation, but remember that Krishna is providing it for you, and he can also take it away from you. So don't complain when he does, because it's really being given by him. So we see from this particular type of reproof that the king was very proud. His little bit of sense gratification, which he normally would have when he rode in the palanquin, when four palanquin bearers would bear him very smoothly, was now being upset. And the mood was, how dare you disturb me? How dare you upset me? How dare you do this? I'm the king, and you're just a servant. Don't you realize my glory, my greatness, don't you know who I am? This is how he was talking to him. So finally, King Jud Barrett, he smiles. That smile should have told the king that he's not dealing with an ordinary person. He was smiling at the ignorance, the stupidity, the foolishness of the king. The ignorance in the sense of here was a person so proud of his position, thinking himself so high and so great and so wonderful, that he was now upset. He was now disturbed because his smooth ride was being jolted. So this was the position of the king. And Jud Barrett he began to, if you will, sermonize and tell him, he began to talk to the king in a rather bold and a rather forthright way, which generally low-class sudras who bear palanquins normally never speak. They don't talk that way to a king. But he spoke to the king in a very forthright, in a very direct manner. And he began to mention various things to him. And he began to explain to the king that the reason that he is upset, the reason he's disturbed, and the reason he's so shaken is that he's completely identifying himself with his physical body. And he doesn't really know who he is. He's thinking that he's being somehow disturbed. He's being somehow offended. When in fact, there is no offense. There is no disturbance whatsoever. So he said to the king that you're thinking that you're your body. You think that because you're your body, you can be harmed. You can be disturbed. You can be shaken. And this is basically your ignorance. And the result of this ignorance is that you are now upset. And this is the result of pride. This is the result of not knowing how to do your duty, of how to serve the Supreme Lord. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu must be performed, otherwise work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, perform your prescribed duty for His satisfaction, and in that way you'll be freed from the bondage to work. This is the statement of Krishna to Arjuna, and he says that is the true goal of all work, all prescribed duties. And he said, Jad Bharat said, obviously you're not offering your work to the Lord; you're taking it for yourself. You're building all of these, you have your kingdom, you're enriching your kingdom, you're giving, you're defending the kingdom, you're going forth and acquiring new lands, you're building your false ego. It's getting bigger and bigger. The more trappings you have, the more beautiful clothes you have, your beautiful wives, your children, all of these things you are thinking are making you better and bigger and greater and higher, when in effect, they actually have no bearing upon your real self. They are doing nothing for you except making you a more foolish rascal. That's all they're doing. They're not helping you at all. So you're thinking as a result of all these accumulations, just like today, people, they have a car, they have a boat, or they have an airplane, or they have a big home. The more they keep accumulating, the more the false ego is the idea that I am the body, and anything that I connect or I relate to this body is me, or an extension of me. And the more I accumulate them, the bigger or greater or higher me gets. And if I get bigger, then I'm fulfilling my true material goal, which is to be the Lord of all I survey. That's what I'm here for. That's what I came into this world for. To become your Lord, your Lord, your Lord, and your Lord. So when the king is glorified, when he's adored, when he's bowed down to, he's thinking, yes, look how great I am, how wonderful I am. They're all bowing down to me. They're all glorifying me. They're all applauding me. They're all thinking I'm so wonderful and so great. And I am great. Otherwise, why would they do this? So this is the big illusion. And Jad Bharat, just by his association, just by a few words, he's shaking up the king. Just as he shook him while he was in the palanquin, by walking in an unsteady manner, he's now shaking up his consciousness and disturbing and upsetting to some extent. But on the other hand, it's making the king remember those Vedic teachings that he learned when he was in either grammar school or junior high or the Gurukul. They had these teachings, but as I said, they put them in the back burner, forget them, and concentrate on the business of acquiring and amassing wealth and power. and great and glory. So he's bringing back. He's bringing back those remembrance of those teachings. And how do we know that? Because the king says, you must be some kind of a saint. Why would he call him a saint? He says, you must be in disguise. Maybe you're a demigod. Because he knew that the Judd Barrett was speaking in a manner which ordinary people do not usually speak. He was speaking like a sage. And he was speaking with conviction, with faith, with determination, the way sages speak. He was not speaking very timidly or hesitantly or uncertainly or anxiously. Oh, I'm in front of the king. Maybe he'll punish me. In fact, the king was promising to punish him for walking the way he was. But he wasn't afraid because he wasn't identifying himself with his body. And he knew that if the body died, he doesn't die. Not only that, but it would be a welcome change because when the body goes, he goes back home, back to Godhead, sooner than expected. So, therefore, Judd Barrett, as a great sage, was not afraid of the king. He wasn't afraid of death. He wasn't afraid of anything because he knew who he really was. And that's a very, very important point. So, he goes on and basically explains to the king how his false pride has caused him so much unrest and so much uncertainty and so much doubt. This false pride, as I said, it makes you think you're something or someone that you're really not. And this is something we all have to learn. We should not think that because, you know, we're devotees, quote unquote, therefore we can't have any false pride. Anytime somebody gives us a compliment, anytime somebody praises us, anytime we do something wonderful and the community talks about it as being something splendorous, anytime that our name is spoken in a very glorifiable way, it's very natural for us to fall into the old rut of identifying ourselves with that praise or with that glory and thinking, yes, that's me. And the next step is, well, if it's me, then I'm special. I have something the others don't have. That puts me on a higher level than everybody else. And once we fall into that horrible trap, that's the time when Krishna begins to withdraw little bits of his opulence of bliss from the devotee. As soon as we begin thinking we're Krishna, and instead of wanting to serve Krishna and give all glory to Krishna, but rather taking it to ourselves as our own property, Krishna begins to withdraw himself, which is pure bliss, pure peace, pure freedom, pure knowledge. And the devotee diseased condition begins to feel an emptiness. And that emptiness causes him to feel very, very dry. When you're empty and dry, you need some kind of pickup, some kind of pleasure. Because the nature of the soul is to always be blissful. And if a person is serving Krishna with love in his heart, then he's going to be blissful because Krishna does reciprocate. If not immediately, then certainly a little later on. But he certainly does reciprocate. But when Krishna stops reciprocating, and the soul feels it, the person in his mind, he's not actually in touch with the soul, but in his mind, he feels empty, he feels lonely, he feels that he doesn't have anyone. So he looks for pleasure because he's not getting the real pleasure that comes from a connection with Krishna. He needs some other kind of pleasure. And that's when he begins to start to stimulate the tongue, stimulate the nose, the genitals, you know, the skin, the ears, the eyes. He looks for other outside external pleasures because there are no longer any internal pleasures coming. And when the internal pleasure stops coming, as I said, he starts the path of fall down. He starts moving downward. So this is the result. There's an old saying, it's an old saw, pride goes before the fall. And that's exactly what it means. That as long as one thinks he's special, superior, greater, bigger, grander, higher than others, and one may trick himself. He may say, oh no, you're praising me, but I'm really lower than you. I'm really smaller than you. But he's just saying that to sound very spiritual. It's another false ego tactic. The false ego will run ropes around your neck, and you don't even know they're being tightened. And one has to introspect. One has to think. Did I say that in order to appear spiritual? Or was it a genuine outpouring of my heart in appreciation for that praise that I received? If it's a genuine outpouring, if a person actually feels that, yes, this person, he didn't have to give me any praise. He didn't have to salute me. He didn't have to offer obeisances to me. He didn't have to glorify me. He did this because he wanted to express his love to Krishna through me. And if he's doing that, then of course I thank him very much. Sometimes I see devotees, if some devotee will praise him or offer him something, he will say, "No, that's I'm just too fallen. Don't give me that, or don't praise me like that. I'm so fallen." It's another form of false ego. It's very, very subtle. Actually, if somebody wants to express his love to you, and actually that love comes from Krishna, then we should accept it graciously. Take it and offer it back to the spiritual master and to Krishna. Leave it at their lotus feet. You have the right to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the results of your activity. Never be attached to not doing your action. So we take those, whatever their praises, or whether they're gifts, or whether they're glorifications, and internally, it doesn't mean we have to make a big display. Oh, Srila Prabhupada, take this, I don't want this. Oh, Krishna, this belongs to you. It doesn't have to be with sound and fury and splendor. It's done subtly. It's done within the heart. My dear Lord, I know that all this is coming from you. So please, I offer it back to you, because you are the cause of all causes. You are causing that person to venerate me or respect me or honor me. And therefore, because you are the cause of it, and you are giving me the ability which is inducing it, which is eliciting it, I give it all back to you. And this is done mentally. So when it is done mentally, there's no big show. There's no big display. It's all done inside as an interchange between the heart of the devotee and the heart of the Lord. As the Lord says, the pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. And I'm always within the heart of the pure devotee. The devotee does not know anything else but me. And I do not know anything else but him. This is the loving exchange that goes on within. It also goes on outside. When we worship the deity, we jump in front of the deity, we clap our hands in front of the deity. All this does not, that doesn't mean that it has to be of the false ego. If we are actually doing this in genuine appreciation of the mercy that Krishna is bestowing upon us, and we are actually thanking him in our mind, thank you so much for letting me look at you in this beautiful form with these beautiful clothes and beautiful headdress, and gorgeous garlands and gorgeous adornments. Thank you so much. It's such a rare opportunity. Millions of people are out there and they're not looking at you, but I have this incredible opportunity, this wonderful privilege to look at you, the Supreme Lord. How great is my destiny? How glorious is my moment? So this is the feeling. So in that mood, why should not one jump? Why should not one clap? Why should not one run around? Lord Chaitanya would go mad. He would go crazy. On the other hand, this should not be done simply for show. Imitating somebody who's genuinely feeling true devotion. Putting on a show does not get us closer to Krishna. But if we actually are not feeling that kind of devotion and love, then we should pray for it. Krishna, I don't feel any love for you. Krishna, I'm not feeling that devotee over there, he's jumping up and down, almost hitting the ceiling. I don't feel that. Please fill my heart with such love for you. Fill my service with such love for you that I will be able to also feel the true and genuine ecstasy rather than putting on a show of false pride. So here we have false pride, and pride, as we said, leads to hell. But when we get rid of that pride, how do we get rid of the pride? Well, pride, as I said, is thinking that you're greater and better and higher than others. So we have to think that we're just spirit souls, 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. That's our size. That's our position. Now, I said at the beginning that I talked about false pride. Now, what is real pride? And I said that this is positive. This is good. When we feel our connection with Krishna, our relationship with Krishna, and we feel that Krishna is not us, but Krishna is the greatest and the highest and the best and the biggest, and that I'm connected, I'm his son, I'm his daughter, like a little child. I remember when I was 4 years old, 5 years old, we used to stand on the corner with all the little kids, and one kid would say, "Oh, my father, he's got a Chevrolet car." And he said, "Well, my father's got a better car than you, he's got a Buick." And then the other guy, he would say, "Well, I got it. My father has a Cadillac." So each kid would be feeling the greatness of his father's position. Similarly, the devotee feels his own greatness from the position of his father. In other words, it's a derived position, not an originated position. Derived from the Father who is giving me this and to whom I give all credit, adoration, profit, distinction, everything, because he's the owner, he's the originator, he's the cause of all causes. So when we are proud from the point of view of this is coming from Krishna, and yes, I'm very grateful, I'm glad that I can be a recipient, or I can be an instrument, a transmitter of Krishna's opulence or glory, then yes, I'm very proud, but I don't take it to myself, I give it to Krishna. Whereas in selfish pride, I take it to myself and I totally forget Krishna. I don't want to hear about God because I want to be God. And if I want to be God, then you see all these movie stars. You never hear God coming out of their mouth because they're praised, they're glorified. Oh, I did this, I did that, and this. Never God. When you get your Academy Award, you hardly ever hear God's name mentioned. Occasionally, somebody who's been brought up in the Bible Belt, it just comes out automatically, praise Jesus, and then onto the director, onto the producer, onto the actors, and onto the crew. So all these people have made it possible for me to win this great award, for which I'm so thankful, and now I'm the greatest, the biggest, the best. So this is what we want to avoid. We are smaller than the smallest. Insignificant, and yet huge, because we're connected with the greatest person in the world, in existence, not the world, in all worlds. And that is our goal. So if we serve Krishna in this mood of genuine humility, of feeling that whatever I do, whatever I eat, whatever I offer, whatever I give, I offer it to you simply because you deserve it, Lord. And because you deserve it, I try to give you my every moment. Even though I am now unsuccessful, please help me to give you my every moment until I reach that point in my life where I never forget you. I always remember you, which, of course, is a principle which is in the Vedas, and these two, and all of the principles of the Vedas are the servant, basically, of these two principles: to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna, and to not just remember and forget, but to remember him in a mood of love and appreciation and glorification, and to never forget him because he's always looking out for us, always caring for us, making certain that we get what we need to advance to the next highest level. So it is a great blessing for us all to be amongst one another, especially to have some of these advanced souls here, Devamrita Swami, Svavas Prabhu, and so many others who are here for so many years due to their dedication and devotion. And we should not take them for granted. We should always think that this is a blessed opportunity, and we should listen to their talks with firm, concentrated heart and mind, so that we can receive the greatest blessings or the results of their sadhana, their devotion, and their love for Krishna. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments or prophecy? Any? No? Then we'll end it here then. Thank you so much. Sorry to keep you over.